Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time California girl wannabe.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that, among the three of us, has attended film festivals all over the world, from Italy to Zanzibar and most major cities on the west coast of the United States. Mary Pat and I took in 23 movies last week at California's 36th annual Palm Springs International Film Festival. And we'll talk a bit about what we saw and how we fared at an event we'd never before experienced. First, though, we're going to discuss a film that opened recently at the Magic Lantern Theater and could be found on the best of 2024 lists of several noted film critics. It's the Indian film All We Imagine as Light, which was written and directed by Mumbai-born filmmaker Payal Kapadia. Let's begin there, on those crowded Indian streets. All too often, films from other countries, Korea, for example, and any number of African countries, are hard for moviegoers from Western countries to understand. That's because most of us don't have the requisite cultural understanding to decipher the various points the respective filmmakers are trying to make. In the case of the Indian film All We Imagine as Light, some of us are left with only the most obvious messaging that writer-director Payal Kapadia wants to send. Even so, that's certainly enough to impress us both with her ability to weave a movie narrative and to explore the wants, needs, and desires of the three women she focuses on. One is Prabha, played by Kani Kusruti, a nurse who bemoans the absence of her husband who has gone off to Germany for work and seems to have deserted her. Another is Anu, played by Divya Prabha, also a nurse who is caught between parents who want to arrange a marriage for her and the Muslim boyfriend she is forced to meet in secret. And then there is Parvati, played by Chaya Kadam, a woman fighting the owners of a building who want to evict her from the apartment her late husband left her. Aside from the obvious social commentary and strong performances, what sets Kapadia's film apart is the final section, in which the women meet up at a beachside village, during which Kapadia gives her characters, and us, a chance to breathe into the sense that life, no matter in what foreign form it might play out, shares the same need to pair vulnerability with the kind of emotional support that only the closest of friends can provide.
And we should say that All We Imagine is Light, I think, first came on most people's radars because it won the grand prize at the Cannes Film Festival last year. And so I've been waiting to see this ever since then. And the New York Times called it the best film of the year. I don't know if I would go that far, but I did really like this. And I think Payal Kapadia is now, you know, with this being a feature debut, it certainly feels like there could be a really exciting career after this movie. And I saw it as a movie kind of about two things. I mean, one, it's a movie about the city, this specific city, but also just the city as a construct. And it opens with these shots of Mumbai and these disembodied voices on the soundtrack, all these different people talking about the circumstances that brought them there and where they are now and how they're feeling. And it's this kind of poetic sequence before we get into the actual narrative itself. And in those moments, we see all of the differences and hear them too in culture and class and even language that can exist in one place. And then I also saw it as a movie about these three women. I mean, that's what it is most obviously, but it's about their past. It's about, as you said, their wants and desires. It's also about their talents because they're all working, at least two of them are working in this hospital, and we're sort of seeing how they navigate
that. They're working as nurses. The third one is a cook.
Yes, yes. But it's also their interactions with the men in their life, which is certainly the most, I think, culturally specific element of All We Imagine is Light, because they have to be very cautious about even minor conversations. The woman who is married and whose husband is absent is sort of carrying on what seems like a flirtation with a doctor who's,
or at least he's trying.
He's trying, and he's writing her poems, and he seems really sweet, but and he knows that she's married. And so even the way that they have to carry on that sort of friendship is fraught. Then you have the woman who has to steal away to even just hold hands with this guy that she's in this relationship with, and also dealing with this idea that she has to commit to marriage because that's what her parents expect of her without ever really knowing the person that she's committing to. And there's even this wonderful sequence in the middle where we see photos from this dating app that she's on, and her and this guy are kind of riffing about the pictures that we see. So there are these kind of wonderful little comic moments in All We Imagine Is Light, and also moments of, I said poetry, but there's visual poetry and filmmaking poetry and actual poetry and even some magical realism that I was not expecting. And I feel like that's been a theme of a lot of movies from this past year, is in the third act we get, there's a moment where we think, is what we're seeing reality or is it something else? So there's a lot to chew on in this movie. And what surprised me most about it is that it doesn't feel overburdened with meaning, with theme. It doesn't feel heavy and plodding in the way that you would think all of these things might feel. It feels like a movie that's light on its feet. And I think that's the biggest
maybe
challenge
that's the,
that it pulls
maybe
off.
That is the reference in the title.
Maybe.
All
yeah,
we imagine is light.
You know,
they do kind of explain it near the end.
I hate to say this to a certain extent, but I think that All We Imagine as Light is the kind of film best appreciated when you see it a second time.
I think so. I would love to see it a second time, especially knowing some of the revelations that are more hinted at than anything in the kind of final interactions with the characters that we see.
And the three women, one of the things that I really liked about it, and I did put this on my top 10 list because I had a chance to see it ahead of time. Oops. But it didn't actually screen here in Spokane in 2024. So my mistake. But one of the things I really liked about the three women is they were very much an intergenerational group.
Yeah.
So the woman who's trying to save her apartment from these developers who are coming in. So obviously she's of a certain age and her husband has left this apartment to her. And she's one of these feisty or fierce, depending on how you look at it, characters. But then at one point, one of the nurses probably connects her up with legal services to try to avoid this eviction. She's like, no, I don't want any help. And so she's a little bit of enigma, but then you gradually figure out what's going on. Prabha, whose husband is in Germany, we have no evidence of his existence except mysteriously this rice cooker appears, this package appears.
Speaking of constructs and metaphors, that's perfect.
Right, because there was no note, there was nothing, and so she's left to wonder what's going on. And then Nathan, as you pointed out, the third woman, Anu, you know, she's sort of the classic trying to break free of these constraints of culture and so forth. It does sort of change in tone a little bit when they go to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there could have been a better segue for that for me. But other than that, that's my only sort of critique of the movie, because it really is beautiful. And I think it's well done. And the characters seem authentic.
I didn't have any real problem with that segue at all, because I thought the whole movie calmed down there.
The women
themselves began to accept one another and accept themselves in a way that I think that the filmmaker was trying to emphasize.
And she's a first-time feature-length director.
It's a really impressive debut.
And
I want to go back to the last part of the film of All We Imagine Is Light, where they do go to that seaside village. You're right that the movie sort of calms down because we don't have the constant din of the city. There's finally open spaces because they're also in these, you know, cramped apartments, or they're in the hospital where they're constantly surrounded by people. Here there's fresh air and there's sunlight. And it's also the point in the movie where I think all of the themes and subplots kind of click together in
that's
a way where
true.
You go, okay, now
and it wasn't maudlin.
No. And it's, you start to understand what she's up to here. I also wanted to talk a little bit about I mentioned it a bit, but the aspect of technology in this movie and the ways in which people are communicating with technologies, because you do have in a lot of ways this city, this culture, however you want to look at it, that is still sort of antiquated. I mean, so many films, especially contemporary films about India, have been about, you know, the caste system, or about how women are trying to break out of these kind of hierarchical structures that are just built into their society. And this film certainly is that. But I loved the ways in which the new technology
was interspersed throughout.
Yeah, and the way that it's juxtaposed with everything else. So, you know, you hear them leaving messages for one another, especially the two lovers. You see their text messages up on screen. And then, of course, there's the scene with the dating app. So there's lots of clever little touches in there. So it isn't just a straightforward intergenerational drama. There's a lot of other things going on in the background that kind of add up to this bigger picture.
Yeah, I was totally touched by the really quiet moments between the doctor and Prabha, where he is offering her the poem. And, you know, there's just this tentative quality to both of them, that they know that this is something that could happen, but probably shouldn't happen. But there's a sense of quiet desperation to it, but it's really very a poignant part of All We Imagine Is Light.
And it becomes even more poignant when we sort of find out, or at least it's hinted at, the real story of her and her husband. And it brings a lot more poignancy and even more questions to that interaction. So, yeah, I think a second viewing will really make this an even stronger movie. But it's pretty strong upon just one viewing.
And that was our discussion of All We Imagine Is Light. This is Movies 101. It's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to talk about the 36th annual Palm Springs International Film Festival. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I discussed Mumbai-born writer-director Payal Kapadia's film All We Imagine Is Light. Now, Mary Pat and I are going to talk about our experiences last week while attending, for the first time, the Palm Springs International Film Festival. As I said at the beginning of the show, the three of us have attended a number of film festivals over the years, and let me take this opportunity to list a couple of local festivals that are upcoming. The first is the Spokane Jewish Film Festival, which will be held January 25th and 26th and February 1st and 2nd. For information, go to SpokaneJewishFilm.org. The second is the Spokane International Film Festival, which will be held March 7th through 9th. For information, go to SpokaneFilmFestival.org. That said, let's talk about the festival that Mary Pat and I attended last week. Over the course of 10 days, we watched 23 movies, narrative and documentaries from 13 different countries. While that may sound impressive, the festival screened 165 films in all from 71 countries. What impressed us the most, though, was how easy it was to get around the city, how we never had trouble finding parking, and how, unlike other festivals, we never had any trouble getting into the films we wanted. I have to admit, though, right offhand, that we had media passes, which allowed us to get into a line, and we were among the first always in the theaters, no matter how small or how big. So that made it really easy for us.
And we did meet a lot of people who, you know, were retired and living in the area, and they bought the platinum level passes. The very last film we went to, a guy said he and his wife had been to 45 films, which...
Wow.
Even I can't imagine sitting that long through all those films. But
no, we've done that over the month, say the 25 days that the old Seattle Film Festival used to run. We'd see maybe 40 films, but that was over 3 weekends.
Yep.
So the thing I wanted to point out also is that although we had media passes, as did our friend Leslie Kelly, and so that allowed us free access to any movie we wanted to see, except for the opening night, we have friends who bought tickets, and they all got in also. So it is an easy festival.
Yeah, it's a more accessible festival. I mean, of course, you know, the other benefit of Palm Springs in January, beautiful. Of course, there was this overlay of the fires in L.A., which had come up suddenly when we were there. And so people were definitely, you know, had a consciousness about what was going on 2 hours away.
But it didn't affect us at all. I mean, there was no smoke, there was no nothing. It just, every time they came out to introduce a movie, they referred to that.
And the staff and volunteers were wonderful. The organization, the organizers were great. And of course, you know, when you can juxtapose seeing movies along with eating wonderful food, trying to play golf, going to museums, going to the spa at the Agua Caliente Seque. I mean, it's all good. What could be bad?
Yeah,
obviously.
Really. I guess when talking about the films that we did see, I wanted to talk first about Baby Girl. We had reviewed Baby Girl, and I think Mary Pat and I, in our talking about Baby Girl, the Nicole Kidman film directed by Halima Rain, we were a little, less...
Enthused than you and other people.
Enthused than certainly you, Nathan.
Yeah.
And we saw it a second time, and Nicole Kidman and Helena Rain came out and talked afterwards. And I have to admit that after seeing that movie the second time, I really got what she was trying to do. And not only that, I got to see how expertly made that film is. There's hardly a wrong scene at all in the film. It fits together perfectly.
And one of the good things about this festival is it's a really nice combination of a few things that are going to appear presently on the big screen and these films that are kind of obscure that we may never be able to access. And so some of our surprises from the fest, we just went to this Bosnian film called My Late Summer, and this woman goes back to her ancestral homeland after she discovers her lineage. And it was just a sweet film that had these unexpected turns. And, you know, we would have never necessarily picked that out. We saw this amazing film from Belgium, which might have been one of your favorites.
Mal d'Aurore. It was a 2.5-hour film that was a created story based upon a real crime. I guess it was in the 90s, in which young women were being kidnapped and trafficked and in many cases murdered by a group of people. And so the main protagonist was a young Belgian cop, a gendarme, and his attempts to solve this crime absolutely ruins his life and ruins everything around him. But it was such a powerful performance and such a powerful film. Well, I hope that opens sometime.
And Nathan, you said that there were some films that you were waiting to see.
Oh,
maybe
yeah.
Among them, I'm Still Here, a Brazilian film. Fernanda Torres won
the
Golden Globe
open
winner.
In Spokane, February 28th at the Magic Lantern.
And then Seed of the Sacred Fig.
Yes. I'm really excited for The Seed of the Sacred Fig, which is the newest movie by Mohammad Rusilov, who I think this movie was shot in secret in Iran.
Yes, it was shot in secret.
And it was smuggled out of the country.
And it's a narrative film.
And you would never know it was shot in secret.
I find that fascinating. And he was, you know, arrested by the government. And I think now he's in Europe, or maybe he's in the States. I know that he is an exile. And so there's a lot of fascinating and troubling circumstances surrounding that movie. I also wanted to ask you about this, because every time I see coverage of the Palm Springs Film Festival, one of the selling points is that all the celebrities come out. And you mentioned that you saw Nicole Kidman. So
Fernanda Torres.
Can you maybe talk about that? Like, what is it like to see these movies and then have these A-list stars come out and either introduce them or talk about them afterwards?
Yeah, I mean, that happens sometimes at other festivals. But because this is held in close proximity to the Golden Globes, it attracts a lot more people. They
and
also
the Oscar
give
nominations
out
are coming.
Right.
So,
they also give out a lot of awards, you know, to up and coming actors and filmmakers. And Nicole Kidman, the thing about her interview and Fernanda Torres, too, is they seemed so normal and down to earth. And that was really, I mean, Nicole Kidman, for example, I mean, she's up there with the director, but she's giving all this praise and these kudos to her, you know, fellow actors as being active collaborators. And you had the opportunity to talk at greater length with an Italian director, because we always gravitate toward the Italian language films. And one of my favorite films of the festival was Parte Nope, which is directed by Paolo Sorrentino.
Oh.
And not everyone liked this movie, but there were things about it that I loved.
Yeah, there were other movies, too. The movie you were talking about, the Italian director, was Trifole by Gabriele Fabbro. And he was such a sweet guy. He's only 28 years old, and it's his, I think, his third feature film. But I was asking him about his first couple of films, and he was going, "Nah, don't even talk about those. Well, they're so embarrassing."
And some of the disappointments, and we'll have an opportunity to discuss these in a little bit more detail, were actually some of the big name and big directed films and so forth. So we have a few of those that are coming out later, so we'll save our discussions.
Were you referring to The Room Next Door,
which is
right now playing at the AMC?
You really popped my balloon on The Room Next Door, which is the new film by Pedro Almodovar, who you know I love. And
Well, so do I, and that's why maybe I was disappointed. And the Penguin Lessons and The Friend, you know, so we'll maybe have the opportunity to talk about these in greater length. The other thing that we liked, there were some very cool documentaries. There was one called Shelf Life, which was about cheese. And
cheese all over the world.
And Leslie Kelly, being the food writer that she remains, was particularly interested in seeing that. And they did a really nice job of talking to people, you're right, all over the world, including in these very unexpected places.
Yeah, that was an easy one to watch. Hard Truths, which is Mike Leigh's new movie, was so hard
That's
to sit
a narrative
through,
film.
Which means it's going to be absolutely something that Nathan will love.
I can't wait.
I know. And then the other one, I'm Your Venus, which was about the Venus extravaganza. Pelagotti,
the character from Paris is Burning.
Yeah, yeah.
And her brothers, who are these Jersey guys, get together with her sort of drag and trans community.
Family, yeah.
And, you know, want to solve her murder. And so that was really interesting film.
Yeah, that checks off a lot of my boxes.
Watching these
hard guy Jersey boys talk about their sister and how much they loved her and how sad they were that they didn't treat her correctly.
Well, and that's, you know, I mean, in the documentary Paris is Burning, that is such a tragic and shocking development that happens. And so I had not heard of that. That sounds really fascinating.
Yeah, so that was cool. We also saw this sort of partially a musical called There's Still Tomorrow, another Italian film directed by Paolo Cortellesi. And that was an interesting film about a woman in World War II Rome, and she's trying to make her way. You know, she's in an abusive marriage, and it was all in black and white. And that was a musical?
It's
in part.
No, there's certain sequences that are played out musically and with dance scenes. It's almost like Emilia Perez.
Yeah.
Men Don't Remember A Traveler's Needs. It's a South Korean film that stars Isabelle Huppert as the weirdest person you've ever met.
That was a strange one.
That sounds cool.
What about your favorite from the festival?
Suho, the Mexican film. And the reason why I liked it so much was because it's a film about cartels, about death, and about violence, and yet it ends on a hopeful note. And I'm just so tired of dark movies. So,
I know. Yeah. Seeing some upbeat ones was definitely good. So, again, if people have the opportunity, if you're a film fan, you know, you also have the opportunity to stand in line and talk to a lot of other rabid film fans. And, again, big shout out to all of the wonderful things that we experienced during our week at the festival.
That's right. That was our wrap-up of Mary Pat's and my experience attending the 36th annual Palm Springs International Film Festival. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbender, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed the Indian film All We Imagine is Light. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show, and we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider this question as posed reportedly by the singer Christina Aguilera. So, where's the Cannes Film Festival being held this year? You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.